Welcome to District 32 Radio. I'm your host, Jackie Campbell, and it's my absolute pleasure to interview each of our members so you can get to know them just that little bit better. Now, in small business, part of the challenge of getting everything out there is actually having a presence. Not just I turn up to networking meetings, not just I can answer my phone, but having something that defines what you do, who you are, and gives you a whole feeling about the business, so that when everybody does what everybody does these days, they jump online, they Google you, they find something which looks like, sounds like, and feels like you. Some of the websites that you go to in the world, you just go, my God, what were they thinking? Oh, here we go. Wiki strikes again. It just doesn't feel right. Or you think all that's changed here is it's just a different color than the last three websites that we looked at. It's absolutely worth getting someone involved who knows what they're talking about, who can get your message out there. Not only that, they can fix it when the darn thing breaks. We've met the most wonderful person who can solve many problems in the space. She's flexible, she's amazing, she's got great ideas. Not only that, she knows how to program as well, so it's not just take this button and add it to a WordPress site. Her name is Sarah Jabardo. She has the very insightful company called Jabardo Proprietary Limited, and she does web design, web development, and can literally make you jump out of the screen. Sarah, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
Now, web design can be a little bit dull. If we want to go from stereotypical, we find big burly men sitting in corners with big slurpy buckets of whatever else in the dark eating pizza in tracky pants. Now, looking at you, you are not any of those things. Not only that, you're also wearing a school dress for November. Yes, so, and yeah. Fundraising, which is just goes to show there's more to life than just programming. Mm-hmm. What got you into web design to start with?
That's actually an extremely good question. When I got my first computer as a young child, I was about the age of 7, and the computer was that much of a piece of junk, it couldn't play games. My brothers had computers, their computers could play games, and I felt so jealous. But there wasn't anything that I could really do about that. I can't magically make a computer more amazing than what it is. Unfortunately, this was less than amazing.
And it was grey, wasn't it? Grey and black.
It was a black Dell laptop.
Wow.
That was falling apart. The CD drive would fall out of it every time you picked it up.
So the important thing about that is you weren't setting your aspirations too high, but you did get into the market.
I did, yeah. Continuing from that, what I did to fill the time a bit is I found this cool program on the computer called Microsoft Front Page. Microsoft Front Page was exclusively designed for website design.
Right, okay.
So it had what's called a WYSIWYG editor.
Your WYSIWYG, I love it.
Which means what you see is what you get. It's basically an interactive visual design version of a website.
So is that almost like that old, when it all became very suddenly, oh my goodness, a graphic user interface. We can see what we're getting.
Yes.
Okay, right. Cool.
Yes.
Now I'm still with you. Use small words. I'm not IT literate. Yep, carry on.
I will do my best. So from that point, I ended up playing around with this visual editor and created a few different websites that were generally on par with 9MSN at the time. Mm-hmm. To me, that was kind of a low bar to sort of cross a little bit, I guess.
Yep, but the thing is, it's still a stepping stone. Yep.
Exactly. What I did eventually is I decided that designing a website from a visual interface wasn't good enough. Mm-hmm. I wanted to know what it looked like in the back end, behind the scenes, what was going on.
Sorry, I'm just going to jump in there just to check that I'm with you. You can design an amazing website in 3 minutes with this free software. That's about dragging visual things and putting them on a page, isn't it? So that's what you're talking about here is building something visually but not being able to change anything. So the green box is the green box. You might have be able to click right click on it and go, I can make it blue, but that's sort of kind of the end of it.
Pretty much.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool. Yep, still with you. Carry on.
Very minimal editing is what visual editors give you. If you want full control, you really need to know how to code. Now, diving into that, there was this nifty little tab called the source tab.
Ah.
I'm like, source, I like tomato sauce. I'm going to click on this. So I clicked on it.
What can I break?
Yeah, exactly. How can I break this? My brother would tell you about how many times I broke things on the computer.
Yeah, I know, just enough to break things, not enough to fix things.
I had to learn how to fix things because he got so frustrated with me breaking things all the time.
That's what you need. It's a little bit of family motivation. Fantastic.
Absolutely. So from that area, after reviewing what's happening in the source tab, I decided that I wanted to try to understand it more. So I would have a split view. So on one side of the screen, I could see the visual editor, and on the other side of the screen, I could see the source tab.
Okay. Now, is that like the matrix, the source, sort of kind of those numbers and letters, and but everything's in code, and there's the comma, dot, blah, 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 and brackets, hoo-ha, which nobody reads?
Pretty much.
Okay.
I mean,
how old are you at this stage?
I was 7.
You're still 7?
I was still 7.
And you've got...
It didn't take me long to get that point.
Please, go on. I'm beginning to feel inferior already, but please, come on.
Everybody's amazing in their own way. I mean, I just... Technology just sings to me.
That said, when you were 7, I was probably about 17. So that's fine. I was still doing meaningful things with my life. Got it.
I eventually noticed these patterns when I made a certain type of change to the visual interface, there would be a reflection in the code. And eventually I started learning how those changes were impacted. And I started changing the way that I would create these websites. Rather than doing it using the visual editor, I used two tabs, source and preview. So what that means is when I updated the source code, the preview tab would refresh, and it would display what I was coding, what I was writing, and I could see these changes that I was making being reflected in real time as to how the end product would look. After a lot of practice, a lot of time, I'd probably be about 10 at this time, I started learning.
So this is interesting enough to keep a 7-year-old interested and enthused for 3 years by this stage.
Yeah.
Some people are just special, I guess, yes.
So from that point, I decided it's not good enough to just write static websites. I wanted to actually do something. Now, at this stage, websites were really basic. There was not much happening. Maybe you might have a moving image or a movie file, but that's about it. That's the level of dynamic content that you could get at that time. Mm-hmm. For me, that wasn't enough. Also, whenever you reduce the size of your screen, for me, I noticed that you had these scroll bars that appeared that you had to keep on scrolling, and it was annoying. So at that point in time, I decided that it wasn't good enough the way things were done. So from that point, I actually started using a technique that wasn't documented at the time. Now, I referred to this technique as an adaptive layout. An adaptive layout in my mind was that the layout itself would change based on the size of the screen of the device that's being used at that time.
Which, this, of course, today is...
Is responsive web design.
Is a given. Yeah, of course it changes when I go from one thing to another thing. But you were 10.
I was 10. This was over 9 years before responsive web design existed. I was playing around with these elements, these dynamic elements, these adaptive layouts, to create websites that changed based on the device that you used it on. That was kind of cool. But
now, don't you wish you, at age 11, had patented that technology?
Oh! Smartphones weren't very much of a thing, so unfortunately, at that point in time, it wouldn't have been worth patenting because the patent would have expired by the time responsive web design existed. And by the time smartphones became, smartphones, tablets, and different screen sizes really became mainstream. At that time, you're sort of working off 800 by 600 screen resolution, which is just tiny compared to today's standards, where you've got these 4K monitors, and in some cases, 8K monitors.
I didn't know we got to 8K. But
we've got 8K.
Wow.
It's insane. I look at those monitors, I'm like, I'm still working off a 2K monitor.
But are they really that much better? I mean, your eyes can only see so much, surely.
Well, I guess it's more about having more space to work with and a better quality on that space without having to resample or upscale a lower resolution to a larger screen size.
If you do that, that's when you get those little blocky edges and things don't look smooth anymore.
Yeah, pixelation.
Well, there you go. I knew more than I thought. Okay,
you're doing
cool.
Great. You're doing great.
Thank you. I feel all better now.
And going back to the journey itself, after realizing that there were these limitations with the technology that I knew at the moment at that point in time. I wanted to do more. So I started learning about programming languages. Most specifically, at this point in time, I was playing with Visual Basic. And then I also delved into a programming language called Personal Homepage. Now, Personal Homepage was the original version of PHP. Okay. PHP powers a lot of the internet. Actually, Facebook is predominantly powered by PHP. Not many people know that. That's one of the cool things that I started learning. And how I learned that was to challenge myself to create an online game. Now, the online game is, the type of game is called an MUD or a MUD game. It's basically a text-based RPG game.
Is that where you pick a path and you tell it to go the left and the sort of typing down the bottom and the little dude moves up top?
No.
That's standard.
I'm just not doing well here.
No, you're fine. So a MUD game is you could click on a square in a map. You essentially are, the page would refresh and it would be inherent that you've moved to that location or that you've moved in that specific action, that path that you're trying to go. A randomizer would run and it would essentially spawn a monster or a specific event based on information contained within a database. You would then interact with that monster or that encounter or that event however you want based on your own choices.
People of my age will relate to that as the Pick a Path books.
Pick a Path books.
Perfect. Get to the end of these. So, you know, if you go left, go to page 23. If you go, yeah, okay.
Yeah, yes. The only difference there is there's random occurrence, which means that no two actions will definitively produce the same result. They'll simply be a different result. So that was the challenge that I had set myself, and it took me quite a few years, probably about two, possibly 3 years to get to that point where I was very comfortable with the language itself. So much so that my brother started handing me his university work.
I was about to say, most people go to uni to learn this, Sarah.
I know. He started handing me his university work, and I started learning about Java, and I started learning about C++. Now, we're getting into sort of some more deeper programming languages here rather than PHP. The interesting thing about those languages is they have very specific commonalities in the way those languages are structured. That's called the syntax. They all follow the one syntax, which is the C syntax.
So you take all of this learning, which has become this amazing blob of stuff, but not just I learned it from a book. This is you developing experiential learning. You know exactly what you need, so you've challenged it. So not only have you learned it, you truly understand it. How does that turn into, I know, build websites for businesses? I mean, there's a big gap between there. I mean, why is this so useful? Why can't you just grab a WordPress platform and or you know, grab one of those off-the-shelf things and build something which changes color for your clients? Why is the programming important? This is what I want to know.
Why is the programming important?
Yes.
Absolutely. There are three main areas that I focus on.
Mm-hmm.
Security is one of the major components of my programming and why I program. Stability and scalability.
Okay. So someone can't hack in and steal my stuff.
Uh-huh.
It's not going to fall over when I need it, and I can make it bigger when I want to.
Yeah.
Got it.
Essentially, yeah. Yeah. So with a lot of the applications that I develop from scratch, you can roll it out to one person, or you could roll it out to 1 million people, and it will still function the exact same without any depreciation of speed.
Okay.
It will be secure.
No numpties going to hack into it.
So no numpties are going to hack into it.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Originally, when I was younger, I didn't know a huge amount about the security aspect, but I was challenged in my...
Let's face it, a seven-year-old shouldn't be worried about whether someone's going to hack into their program. That's not something which crosses your mind. It's like, how do I make that turn around?
To me, it's like a ball of Play-Doh and I can craft whatever I want out of it.
Yeah, but no one's going to walk in from the side and steal the arms off your monster. You know, this is just not a concept for a 7-through-11-year-old.
I had two brothers. They probably would.
Yeah, actually, you should have known better. You're right.
But eventually, I got to start working professionally. And I became challenged by others in my industry who would review my code. They found holes, which is fantastic.
How dare they?
No, it's a brilliant concept. It's always amazing when you find areas at which you can improve. That's the way I look at it.
Okay, fair enough.
I get excited about bugs when I write an application because a bug gives me an opportunity to revisit that code and improve upon it. For me, applications, websites, they're not just this once-off product. They're a service. They require ongoing maintenance. They require ongoing updates. They're not static. They're these pseudo-living organisms that require interaction. Otherwise, they'll just rot away, unfortunately.
They're not set. What do you mean they're not set and forget? I've got a website for my business. It's done. Move on to the next project.
How long are you going to be happy with that website for?
Well, it's been 4 years so far and I haven't changed anything. I know. People listening in should see the eye rolling that just went on for Sarah. Well, you're right. And I think it's because we don't think about these things.
Totally right, yeah.
What difference does that make to your clients?
So the difference it makes is my clients know that I'm dedicated to my work. I've grown up doing this. It is literally a second nature to me, like breathing or eating nice food. For me, it's something that's so important that I would obsess over it until I'm happy with where it's at. And my clients know that. They see it. They then see the results when I test it. Part of my testing for anything that I write is to do what's called a penetration test. I will try to actively hack what I write. I will put the knowledge that I have in web application penetration testing into action for everything that I write. I will try to actively break it.
If you can't break it and you wrote it, there's chances are someone who doesn't. Yeah, okay, fair, good point.
Well, if I can't break it and I wrote it, then it's quite unlikely that the average hacker is going to have much of a chance.
To come to you, do I need to have a website? Can I start from scratch? Can you take on something which is already in existence and make it better?
Yes. All three.
All three of those? Fantastic. So if I already have a WordPress website, which is obviously better than a lot of the other off-the-shelf stuff. So if I've already ventured into WordPress land, because I know WordPress has got coding behind it, not just pretty pictures, can you then effectively take that WordPress site and change the back end?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So that I can then have things flying and flashing even though there's not that functionality in the platform that I've currently got it hosted on.
So the flying and flashing is part of what's called front-end design. Back-end design is the functionality as to how the website calculates information, stores information, and retrieves information from what's called the database, which I'm sure most people probably know about a database.
So you do both bits. You make it look good and work good.
Yes, and I also make the database work properly.
So we can get the website so it does what we want it to do. It looks how we want it to look. It functions how we want it to function. It's nice and secure. It's not going to fall over. And it really reflects us rather than the limitations of perhaps the boxes and the colour changes and the whatever else that perhaps we were able to pull into that graphic front end that we were used to dealing with.
Absolutely. And sort of stemming from that, a lot of designers that you can come across will generally download a base theme, a basic website theme for WordPress, or they'll get you to go through a place like ThemeForest. ThemeForest is actually pretty good in comparison. They'll get you to download a theme that you like, then install it on your WordPress, and they'll modify it to suit your needs. Now, there's no inherent problems with that if you can trust who made that initial template. The problem with WordPress is WordPress attempts to execute all of the code that it's given in the back end. The issue with that is if you can't wholeheartedly trust where you got that code from, how can you be sure that there's not a backdoor in it?
Which is the ability for someone to get in and mess with stuff that you perhaps have not authorized on your, you know, they're not supposed to have login details or whatever.
Exactly. A means for them to easily bypass the security of your website for whatever intent they have. Now, some people may say, oh, I don't have much information on my website. I don't keep client records. There's no inherent risk there for it. It doesn't matter if it goes down. Well, what if their aim wasn't simply to gather information from your database? What if their aim was to put a tracking code or a password phishing code on your website so that those who go to your website receive this information. It loads that tracking information and they start tracking your clients or your potential clients. Or it pops up with a password prompt masquerading as a part of Windows. Your client then enters in their password details. Well, you've just inherently helped a hacker hack your clients.
And who could be anybody and anything?
Literally.
Wow. Okay. It's not often that someone manages to amaze me and scare me in the same interview. Well done.
I apologize.
Okay, so if people want to stop this happening, I think cautious approach is sensible. And they need to have a conversation, obviously, with you. Just, are you able to have a quick look at their website and go, yes, this is something. Actually, it's not too bad. Oh, my God, what were you thinking? Pull it down immediately. Or really, purple? How is the best way for them to get in contact with you?
So the best way to get in contact with me would be a phone call. I love a phone call. Or an email. Emails are great too. Or a text message. Or a Facebook message. Hey, just reach out to me. It's totally fine. I'll happily have a look at your website and let you know if there's anything that jumps out at me.
Glaring horribles, yep.
Or if there's anything innately problematic about the site itself, I will give you some suggestions. If you want to act on that yourself, you're more than welcome to. That's totally fine. My aim is simply to help you improve your website for your business. If you want to work with me to have that sorted, we'll sit down over a nice coffee. There's some great places in Vic Park.
Absolutely.
Really good places. We'll sit down, we'll have a coffee, and while we're probably sitting down talking about it, I'll probably have my iPad out and I'll start having a more in-depth look at your site. And I'll come up with a list of things that I would recommend that we change. And then we go from there with a quote and move forward that way.
Brilliant. So what is your email?
So my email is contact@jabado.com.au.
You better spell that.
Yep. contact@jabado.com.au.
Literally how it says.
Exactly.
Cool. Fantastic. And so they can drop you an email. And obviously your website, you've got a website up and running which has got your email addresses and everything on there. So jump on there, have a bit of a look at what you do. Gives you a bit of a showcase as well.
Yep.
And then Vic Park is a good place for coffee.
Vic Park is an amazing place for coffee.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for your time. I've now taken lots of notes and some of them I need to action. Thanks for joining us on District 32 Radio. If you'd like to know more, please head across to our website, district32.com.au.